I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1966. The album, The Monkees. The artist, The Monkees. My guest, Tony Thaxton. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So, this is going to be one of those exceptions where it's not technically a comedy album, but it's a comedy group on a level, you know?
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's a weird thing. I think everything about The Monkees is, I find, kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
It's such a strange thing, and there's not really anything else quite like it, I think.
That's absolutely true. And, yeah. I mean, we should... So, full disclosure, you're a musician, but it's not all you do. So, like, can we talk about... is there any influence, or is it just something you like?
I mean, I'm sure deep down there's some sort of influence. I don't know that I could pull it, other than the fact that I, you know, those are, like, two of my favorite things to be involved with, at least, is comedy and music.
Sure.
So, like, it just, yeah, I guess it sort of comes from there. But yeah, like, when I was, I guess I would have been 8 years old, is when the 20th anniversary of the Monkees happened.
Okay.
This was 1986.
Yeah.
So now you do the math, figure out how old I am. And I don't know what it was. There was something, as an 8-year-old kid, was just like watching a lot of MTV.
Sure.
And for some reason, that was the thing that MTV started showing all the time, was reruns of The Monkees.
I didn't remember that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, and apparently, the story is that, 86 was going to be the 20th anniversary of The Monkees, so they had planned on doing like a reunion tour and go out and do these things, but apparently it was coincidental that MTV started showing old episodes.
Really?
Okay. And then that actually took off and weirdly got popular in 1986.
That's funny.
And then the Monkees tour, I think, ended up being a much bigger thing than it was anticipated. And so I was just like, I don't know, for some reason I was the target market. I was all about it.
I mean, it's a perfect age. And I mean, I have not seen the show since I was a kid. So I don't know. I don't think there's no issue whether it holds up or not. It doesn't matter. If it was cool to you as a kid, great. But like, I don't remember. Have you seen the show in a long time?
I have seen a little bit, and I've talked to some friends about it. And some friends have claimed that it holds up pretty well.
Okay.
I haven't given it enough time. I watched like an episode or two and was like, all right, it's weird how little I remember.
Yeah.
Because I remember the song stuck with me more than the show did, which I almost feel like is kind of, in a way, unless you're talking about Daydream Believer or the theme song, I feel like most people, or maybe Last Train to Clarksville, throw that in there.
Sure.
I feel like a lot of people aren't going to pull many other Monkees songs besides that.
You're probably right.
Yeah. Like, can you? Can
I'm
you pull
a big
another
fan,
one?
But I'm listening to this album, and I'm like, I know two songs off this album. So I was like, fuck, maybe I'm not as big of a fan as I thought I was. Yeah. I love them to death. Like, and Daydream Believer is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yeah.
Apparently, one of those songs my mom listened to while in the womb a bunch. So that is why it's apparently stuck. That's what she says anyway. But yeah, it's I'm surprised I didn't know any of the other songs in this album.
Yeah. I hadn't listened to the album in its entirety in a while until the other day, knowing that we were going to do this. And I did remember most of the songs.
Okay.
There's only a couple of, actually, really only the theme song and Last Train to Clarksville, I think, on this record are the only ones that were necessarily quote-unquote hits.
Yeah, right.
But there's a lot of songs, like, I remembered, and, like, the second song on the record, Saturday's Child. I think that song's awesome. I think that song's really ahead of its time,
it's great.
Honestly. Yeah. There's really cool, just, like, rhythmic things going on in that song. That song speaks to me as, like, wow, this is interesting, especially for 1966.
Sure.
Like, this is pretty cool.
I mean, they were created, 2 years into the Beatles being a thing here? So, I mean, you know, that's not bad. I mean, for what they to follow that algorithm that perfectly is pretty great.
Yeah. It's such a weird thing because they, you know, I think it's pretty well known that they didn't really, at a later point, they actually started playing mm-hmm. some on the records, but this first one, it was, you know, basically just like the soundtrack to the TV show.
Yeah.
And they were just a creation. Like, they weren't really a band.
Right.
They were, it was a band for a TV show that was thrown together. And so none of, I think there's one song that Peter Tork plays guitar on or
okay.
something like that.
Right.
And I think Mike Nesmith wrote one or two of the songs.
Sure.
Everything else is written by other people, performed by other people. There's lead vocals by different monkeys, but even the backup vocals are not
that
them.
I didn't
They're
know.
They're other
That's
like session
so
guys.
Funny. Holy shit.
It's a really weird thing.
You know, I've never looked up, because I know that famously, you know, some really insanely or eventually insanely famous writers wrote a bunch of their songs. I didn't think to look and see if there's anybody. I mean, there's rarely are there lists of who were the session musicians on these things. So I guess we won't know.
Yeah, I actually did look that up.
You did? Okay.
And there was nothing. There was nothing crazy on this one.
Okay.
I did
okay.
see like there have been since some like special, not special editions. That's the Star Wars nerd in me coming up. The later releases where they did, you know, bonus tracks and stuff. Some of those like had like Glenn Campbell playing guitar and
sure,
things like that.
Sure.
But most of these were like, you know, so many of these songs were written by Boyce and Hart, and those guys end up playing a lot of the stuff
okay.
on there.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But no, this, and when you had asked me to do this, I was excited to do it because this is the kind of stuff I love doing. But also, I grew, even though I was a musician, I grew up loving comedy and was like very into it from a young age. Like, those always been like two things that I really love.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a record player as a kid. So, you know, we even talked about this a little bit. Like, I wanted to really try and stay true to the vinyl thing.
Sure.
Because
like, yeah.
there were plenty of albums that I thought of that were more traditionally comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I didn't remember actually owning those on vinyl.
Sure.
And or I knew there were things that had been done on this show before.
Yeah, so, well, that's almost inevitable.
Yeah, so I asked you, I was like, what about this? I know it's a weird choice.
I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, you know, and it's also, it got me thinking today, we technically could do Herman's Hermits because they made at least two comedy movies.
Movies?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We have the soundtrack to one of them, but they also had a movie that I cannot find. I think you can get it on VHS for like $90 called Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter.
Right.
Obvious what it's named after, but Mrs. Brown is the name of a fucking greyhound, and it's about them having a dog in a race. And as a kid, for some reason, it's just all this like mod clothing. It's all shot in England. It's like, this is the greatest thing ever, which I'm sure it's horrible.
Yeah.
But it's a comedy, and they were passable actors for me as a little kid to not know any better.
Right.
So now I think I could talk about Herman's Hermits on this show, too, because I'd love to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Ed, tying this all together,
mm-hmm.
I went and saw the Monkees in 1986 on that 20th anniversary.
I was
going to
ask,
tour.
Okay.
One of the openers, Herman's Hermits.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's so good. Now, would you have known if the rest of Herman's Hermits were there, or is it just, it's okay if it's just what's
his name? I didn't. I think as an 8-year-old kid, I think that was my introduction to Herman's Hermits, mm-hmm. so it meant mm-hmm. nothing to me at the time.
Okay, makes sense. Just a 40-year-old guy with an unnaturally high voice up on stage, probably.
Yeah. So, but since then, I have looked it up, and I think it was one of those things where it was mostly not the same people.
Yeah.
You know, it was like one or two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure. I'm not even positive if Peter Noon was one of the guys.
Yeah. That's
I got to assume he was, but
right,
at the same time, I kind of think he wasn't.
Was Mike Nesmith on this tour?
No.
Was he? Yeah, I was gonna say like
this
he
was,
never.
Yeah, this was. It was the other three.
Yeah,
and apparently during that tour he did pop up at least a show or two. Like maybe the LA show or something.
Okay.
Did a song with them. But yeah, that was the whole thing. Is he had really? He was the most moved on.
Mm-hmm.
If of everybody else, I said that's very strange. He was the most moved on.
I mean, he's the one that we all assume, I guess, is he the artist of the group? Is he the musician of the group?
I think a little
of
both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because right. as I said, I think he's the only one that got some sort of writing credit and or producing credit
right,
on this
right.
record.
Yeah, okay.
And I think Peter Tork was the only, he actually played something on a song. I think I said that already.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like those two were the like real musicians,
mm-hmm.
and I think Mickey and Davey were more on the acting side.
Sure.
But weirdly, I think the two best singers.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is odd.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Davey's voice. He's adorable. I mean, he's just adorable in general. I think if I'm not mistaken, I could be talking out of my ass, but yeah, he was. I know that he played, I'm almost certain he played like the Artful Dodger in the West End or something in Oliver as a kid. If I'm not, is that out of my ass?
You're at least on, if that's not right, you're at least on the right track because yeah. I had forgotten about this, but mm-hmm. I do know that he was weirdly on that Ed Sullivan episode when the Beatles were on because what? he was in like a Oliver or something like
yes,
that.
Yeah.
Like,
so yeah, I think he was the Artful Dodger if I'm not mistaken in Oliver. Now I've got to look cause I've got, this is, and I also think he was a jockey, but that also could just be,
that is correct.
100%
yes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I'm not completely out of my own ass on that one.
You're safe.
Artful Dodger. There we go. Okay, great. So, all right. Confirm that. So yeah, he was a fascinating, I was going to call him little guy just because he's adorable and small.
I mean, it's,
you know, but yeah, it is odd that his is whose voice, I'm trying to think whose voice I like more in there. So I love his voice.
Yeah.
But I also, I don't know. I mean, do you have a favorite monkey? Do you have to pick?
I mean, I think when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
I like Davey seemed like the cool one
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and I also think that this is a pathetic confession here, but I think that partially had to do, again, reminder, this was 1986.
Uh-huh. Sure.
And so when they came out, he was the one that had long hair.
Mm-hmm.
And but mm-hmm. in retrospect, he just had this terrible mullet,
uh-huh.
this 80s mullet.
Uh-huh.
But at the time, that was cool to me.
Sure.
So like he seemed like the cool one, where the other two just kind of seemed like old guys.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that definitely Mike and Peter were, they were the more talented guys mm-hmm. in the band. But and I've come to appreciate them a little more in old age. But yeah. But then if we're going strictly voice, I think Mickey maybe had the strongest voice,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and which was a weird thing. That, and he sang most of, like, not all, but he sang the, I think, a heavy majority of the songs.
Yeah,
which was weird then because he was the drummer.
Right.
So, and it was a fake band. So it's like, why you make him be the drummer?
Yeah, right, right.
Which apparently the rumor, who knows if it's true, was when they were actually, when they cast those four guys mm-hmm. for the show, the rumor is that they were like then deciding who was going to play what.
Mm-hmm.
And they said something about like, who wants to play drums, and the other three guys took a step backwards and he didn't.
Of course.
No clue if that's true.
It sounds like a monkey sketch, so it sounds perfect. I love it. That's really funny to me.
Yeah.
Just got... Do you remember... I mean, you sound like you don't remember any specifics of the show, but like... I assume for you it was like the feel of the show. It must have been like...
Yeah.
It was just like... I'm trying to remember anything about it now that I'm thinking about it.
Right. I know. I was thinking about it earlier today, knowing that we were going to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the biggest... There are two things that I remember the most. Like, if I think of that show, and they're weird. It's like, why are these the things I remember? It was the first time I had ever seen Rip Taylor.
Uh-huh.
I almost said Rip Torn. There's two. Why are there two famous Rips?
That's really not fair.
It always takes me a second to remember which one is which.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, he was on, I want to say even several episodes.
That's
but
funny.
I may be wrong. He was on at least one, and that was the first time I'd ever seen him, and you know, he's kind of memorable once you see him. And then there was a Christmas episode, which I'm a big nerd about Christmas, and I can't even remember if the whole episode was Christmas themed. I think it was, but they do at the end of the episode, they cut to a performance and I think they're actually doing it live. And it's just a cappella of them doing this song called Ryushu, which apparently is like a Spanish Christmas carol.
Okay.
And it's the only way I've ever heard the song before or since.
Okay.
But it's actually like, it's pretty awesome. Like it's like, it's them just doing these massive harmonies, no musical accompaniment, and it's all in Spanish,
uh-huh.
and it's impressive.
It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, and it wasn't on any records or anything, but I think it's one of those things where since, you know, when you find these deluxe versions in iTunes
sure,
and stuff, you can find
there.
It now.
Okay.
So that's made its way onto my Christmas playlist that'll mm-hmm. break out in December. Yeah,
that's nice. Yeah. Now, so you're not one of those people. We'll go into the Christmas thing for just a second. You're not one of those people who can listen to Christmas music year-round.
No, I don't. It's even though I do a stupid year-round Christmas-themed podcast,
although which is delightful.
Thank you. It's really just constantly derailed. Like, really, Christmas is like, you know, I do love it, and it stays more on track when it is Christmas time.
Mm-hmm, of course.
It's easier to then, but, like, the rest of the year, it's like our hokey setup is that we're, like, trying to pull off a Christmas special, but it always gets derailed.
Of course,
Now I forgot what your question was.
Yep, me too.
That speaks to my answer.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God. See, I'm such a great interviewer. That's what happened. No, the question was, it was specifically about Christmas, though. Do you listen to it year-round, or could you?
Oh, right.
But you're not. It doesn't seem like you're that good.
I don't. And I, even with, like, Christmas movies, like, I feel like I've been in, like, scenarios where hanging out with people and we're bored or something and just staying in and trying to, like, figure out a movie to watch or something, mm-hmm. and somebody might be like, let's watch Elf. I'm like, no, it's April. Right. Watching Elf in April. But now says the guy doing the year-round Christmas podcast. Yeah, with the music, it's the same way. Like, I will say it is getting earlier a little bit every year. It's never before. It's always some point in November that okay. I'll... So okay. It's reasonable,
mm-hmm.
I think. But, yeah, I was actually talking about this yesterday when I was recording an episode. I was worried when I started doing it. I was worried that it was gonna burn me out.
Yep,
on it.
I get that. Like, sure,
but it actually did the opposite. Yeah. Like, I get even more excited about Christmas.
That's time. Awesome.
So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I just really enjoy that podcast. I think it's one of the reasons I ended up inviting you. Like, I mean, it's weird for me to meet There are literally, like, comedians who have a history with... I had Greg Turkington on yesterday, uh-huh. Neil Hamburger, on the show. He doesn't do podcasts. And I kind of realized halfway in the middle, like, I sort of know you peripherally from things. Like, yeah. I know him, I know of him, I know his work, and I studied him. And it's like, I guess I don't know you from the primary thing people would know you from. You know what I mean? Mm. And it's very weird. I had to look up Motion City Soundtrack a while ago because I'd seen you or heard you on probably Doug Loves Movies first.
Uh-huh.
Is it weird to have people know you peripherally from things despite...
No. In all honesty, like, I get really excited when someone tells me that they don't know me from my old band.
Okay.
Because, first of all, I don't ever expect somebody to know me.
Uh-huh.
But if they do, I pretty much assume that it's going to be from the band.
Sure.
So, like, every now and then I get a tweet or whatever. Even like, when I went back to the band last year for mm-hmm. the farewell tour, like, even, like, people coming up to me, like, saying things like, I love when you're on Never Not Funny.
Okay, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Like, I'm not saying those people necessarily know me, but every now and then I will get an email or a tweet or something that's like, I didn't know about your band, but now I'm checking it out and stuff. So, yeah, I really like that. It's nice to, like, I don't know. It's nice to sort of, like, be known from another thing.
Sure.
Because, you know, even just I was the drummer, so, like, drummer's not usually the one getting recognized and things like that.
Yeah.
So, like, it's kind of nice to, you know, go from, you know, we would play a show, I'd go out to say hi to people afterwards, and then people would just hand me their phones to take their picture with our singer.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I got
of
very
course.
Used to that
of
kind
course.
Of thing.
Yeah.
So then when, like, doing these sort of things, like, I'll do a Doug Loves Movies or something, and then I leave, and there's people outside and, like, telling me good job or asking me to sign a thing. I'm like, oh, all right. Okay,
I get that.
Thanks.
You know, I get that, and it now makes me, I think, understand Mike Nesmith's position a little more, maybe.
Yeah.
Just maybe a little bit. Like, even though, despite being upfront and being kind of one of the cute ones, you know, he's still like, I mean, the guy ended up being kind of super groundbreaking in video production too, which a lot of people don't realize. But uh-huh. like, he just had this huge hand in making video production and art, which is weird.
Well, yeah, because he really seems like he's the guy that did stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the other guys just sort of either faded away or would pop up just, like, singing again here and there.
Right.
Whereas he did these other things.
There's these guys, I mean, they're all living off of royalties, which I think in those days might have actually been beneficial, because mm-hmm. living off of a musician's pay has never been a thing, especially then, right? Like, songwriters got fucked for so long.
Yeah.
And none of them are songwriters, obviously, most of them. But still, they're living off of what I have to assume are TV residuals, maybe. Yeah. And
I
so,
guess. I don't
right?
even know, yeah.
But he's a guy who doesn't necessarily care about it, doesn't need to float on that.
Yeah.
So does just a million different things.
Right. And I think that goes with the getting to respect him a lot more as I got older. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you had other things you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because I guess I identify with that, like that going with the, like, not that I'm trying to be a professional podcast guest.
Right.
But, like, you know, it is nice to do those things sometimes. And it's just, it's another thing,
mm-hmm.
even though it's just talking and hanging out or whatever. But I don't know. It's fun. I'm not just known for hitting things all the time. Yeah.
I wonder if there's any, if the monkeys, to a lesser extent maybe, but the Beatles as well, if they in any way informed the whole thing where musicians want to be comedians, comedians want to be musicians, that kind of thing. I kind of wonder if it comes from that at all.
Right.
Because not that they couldn't have originated it. I mean, musicians being cool has been a thing forever. I mean, jazz gave us that, sure. But I don't know if before, because the Beatles were, I would say, naturally maybe way too funny. They could have been a comedy group if they weren't making music.
Totally.
If they'd wanted to make comedy songs, like, they would have been a great novelty act.
Yeah, because, no, dude, that press conference when they land in New York on that first trip, phenomenal. It's hilarious.
It is great.
Like, their answers are so great and so quick.
That's the problem. Too fast.
Yeah.
Too good. And actually, to kind of merge subjects here, have you heard their Christmas, like the special albums that they would release?
Like the fan club things? I love those so much. They're really fun because they're just them, like, seeming like, well, yeah, they haven't started hating each other yet.
You're right, yeah.
And they're just, like, loving life and mm-hmm. having fun.
And it's even really kind of doing sketches, like, at least music sketches on
uh-huh.
it. And then fucking with the shitty scripts they're given. They're great. They're so much fun.
Yeah, it's really good stuff.
Yeah, I would recommend anybody. That's what made me think. I'm like, well, crap, I guess we could also do the Beatles now because they technically kind of release comedy albums. Like,
Well, now I'm regretting my decision.
Is there anybody that you think on of the monkeys that was maybe, we've talked about who are the more natural music talents. Mm-hmm. I don't like the word talent, but still, you get what I'm saying. Is there one that stands out as the funniest of the group? Like, genuinely?
I mean, my gut, again, is kind of telling me Mickey on that.
Yeah,
I feel like he kind of seemed like, again, but it's been a while, as mm-hmm. we said, since I've watched him. But I sort of remember laughing at him the most as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I remember a lot of dumb facial expressions and things of that nature.
He's the goofiest of them all.
Yeah.
Like, the goofiest looking, no insult to him, but just the goofiest looking.
Oh, yeah. No, he is. He's not aging well. there is a great... Well, the video is whatever, but I love it for this aspect. Like, a year ago or whenever it was, when they put out a record like a last summer or something like that. And it's actually an interesting record because I don't love it as a whole, but there are things about it that are good and it's just interesting that they did it because first of all, Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne
mm-hmm.
and writes like every big movie song you've heard in the last 20 years, like mm-hmm. That Thing You Do and stuff like that.
Yep.
He produced the record.
Okay. I didn't know that.
So he did that. And then they also have like tons of other people writing songs for, like, Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie, mm-hmm. Rivers from Weezer wrote mm-hmm. a song, and I'm blanking on
them. Andy Partridge from XTC wrote a few of them.
That's right. Why am I forgetting that one?
My favorite band of all time.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm an XTC fan, too.
Yeah.
I can't go, like, crazy deep on them, but mm-hmm. I do like them a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so when that record was coming out, they released this video, like, kind of announcing it and showed these, like, behind the scenes, like them recording,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason, every time they show Mickey Dolenz in that video, he's wearing some sort of Breaking Bad T-shirt. Like, it's not all from the same day, and he's wearing the one T-shirt.
There's different Breaking Bad. What the fuck? That's amazing. Holy shit!
It's such a like weird thing, but I couldn't help but notice every time they show him, he's wearing a. You know, you'll see the same one a few times, but it's at least a Breaking Bad shirt every time you see him.
Holy crap. That is so good. That is very strange to
yeah.
me.
It's just dumb things like that I find wonderfully hilarious.
Mm-hmm. What's your knowledge of the Monkees, like their whole catalog? Like, since we're talking about their first one, what's your knowledge of where they went from there?
Fairly good.
Okay.
Because, like I said, especially when I was younger, like I'll get very obsessive about things and like I feel like really my childhood was Star Wars the monkeys, the California raisins.
I almost brought it up, but I didn't.
It's weirdly true, though. Mm-hmm. And it was probably like around the same time. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like a, maybe a year or two apart. But I don't know why. That's the thing that comes up on the podcast a lot. We like constantly find ways to shoehorn the California raisins in.
Is that Christmas special have something to do with it? Because I will tell you, their rendition of We Three Kings for some reason has been stuck in my head on a loop for a long time.
I get more of their version of Rudolph in there, which I since have learned is basically just the Temptations version of Rudolph, which really makes sense because that was basically their whole shtick.
Sure.
But so that was I really remember. So I did have some California raisins on vinyl.
Did you? Oh my god!
So I should have gone that route. Yeah, is what I should have done.
Oh my god!
But that was a thing where I would just get really into things, and like with those monkeys records, I would actually like listen to them as whether I had them on like vinyl or if it was a cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching the show, and I even had like books and stuff like that that I would read about them, and like that was the thing. I wasn't a big reader as a kid, but like you give me something like that, and I'll read it.
Yeah,
and I'll just soak up that information. So like, yeah, I probably know a little too much at times.
Was this stuff already in the house? The monkey stuff? Like, were your parents either of them into it?
Yes and no. Like, not to the extent that I was.
Sure.
But like tech, like this record, like my parents had it on vinyl.
Okay.
So like some of the other ones, then I went and bought. I worked a hard week and then went and bought it with my hard earned cash as an 8-year-old. But yeah, so like my parents had a couple. I remember having this record. I remember having Headquarters, which I think was the third record.
Okay.
And maybe like one or two others. So we had some of them that came from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
But then the collection got a lot bigger because of me.
Does their sound progress in a way indicative of a band progressing or indicative of the times changing or a little bit of both? Or am I giving you too many options to choose from?
Yeah, I think you might be because I want to pick all those options.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
Yeah. No, I think it's more it does progress, but it progresses in the way that time was progressing. And, you know, as it gets more toward the late 60s, it gets a little more like psychedelic, for lack of better terms. Have you ever seen Head?
I was gonna ask you if you had, because I have not yet, and I wanted to for a long time.
Man, it is a hard watch.
Yeah.
It's I wanted to say it's worth watching, but I don't know if it is. I saw it in like at the height of monkey mania for me when I was a kid. I saw it and I was so excited to see it. Because, you know, this was a different time. This was, like, I think it was, like, my parents' friends or something had HBO or something, like, recorded it off on a VHS and then, like, gave me the tape or something. So that was, like, the only way. Like, because I couldn't just, it was hard to get at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even sure you could rent it at that point. So I watched it, was so excited, and I just remember being so confused by what was going on.
Of course.
And so, like,
it's a super psychedelic movie. We should just at least let people, it's just super, just a giant mind fuck and, like, an attempt to be serious, right? Like, a legit.
I mean, kind of. Yeah. Well, I think the movie basically starts with them all committing suicide or something. It's like set to this like kind of like serious slower song, and then them like jumping off a bridge, and apparently the movie was just like it written by Jack Nicholson, by the way.
That's right.
And apparently it was just like them and Jack Nicholson smoking a bunch of pot and then making this movie.
That's insane.
And so I tried to watch it again as an adult.
Yeah.
God, it's probably already been like 10 years though now. And didn't sit any better as an adult. Like I was sort of like, maybe this will make more sense watching it now. Nope. Not at all.
It's like One Direction doing a mumblecore film now. That's what I'm like. That's what I'm imagining.
Pretty much. You do get like, there's a couple moments that I think did make me laugh, but maybe just more the like, it was almost that like uncomfortable, like what the hell is going on laughter.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson shows up in at least a scene, maybe more than one, but he does pop up at one point.
Is it their only film?
Yes.
So they don't have, because they have a TV show. I guess that serves as their Hard Day's Night. That serves it because you would expect it would jump immediately to a super poppy film, some success, and then they make Head because they say fuck it. What do you know of the history of them deciding that Head was a good idea? Because I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if I know a ton about that.
Okay.
But if I remember right, I think Head came out in 68, I want to say.
Okay.
And the show started in 66.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because that's like, the difference between those two things is insane.
Yeah.
And that's 2 years.
There are podcasts celebrating a 10-year anniversary right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucked to me. Two years.
Uh-huh. And it, I mean, it's... Yeah, and it, like as a kid, like knowing that it like 2 years seems like an eternity when you're a child.
Of course.
And so like, because I remember even like there was that point in the show that's one other thing I remember about the show is there being the earlier seasons where Mickey straightened his hair and then later he had curly hair.
Interesting. Okay.
And he has curly hair and Head.
Uh-huh.
And so yeah, I think the show only actually lasted for 2 or 3 years, I think. And but I think there was like a lot of, it was just so different back then. I think it was, even though it was only a couple of seasons, I think it's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything more? I mean, okay, so the guys didn't put themselves together into a group, but is that more artificial than a band coming together the way they do? Most of the time we're a bunch of friends, but I mean, but then there's also the old standby of, hey, we put out an ad for a gunslinger, as they like to say, whatever, however they put it in High Fidelity. There's that old standard.
Yeah.
Does it ever happen that way? I know nothing about music, despite the guitars on my wall. Disregard those are practically decoration. But
does it happen in what, in the way of people just responding to?
Yeah.
Or you
yeah.
mean
what
do
you, what's organic? The more natural way? How do you see band? How have bands come together in your experience?
In my experience, it's always been, organic and just like, you know, have some friends that, you know, like my first band was in high school and it was just like some of my friends were in the school band or just like played guitar or whatever for fun at home. And then, you know, we just start talking. It's like, oh, or even like even before finding out, you know, you kind of become friends with them. And then one day something happens where they say something about that they play guitar. Like, oh, really? And then, you know, I would invite them over to my house and then we would play. And then it's like, oh, you know what? So-and-so plays bass. And then they come over and then it just like eventually like becomes a more regular thing. And then hopefully start playing somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been my experience. There definitely are those things out there that, you know, there are ads you can respond to sometimes.
Sure.
But I think that, not always, but a lot of times that can be more like it's a guy or a girl that's like, I wrote all these songs by myself. I want to have a backing band to play it. And like, I think those scenarios, then, you know, then you get the like hired gun situation where they come in and do that. Which, you know, so yeah, they're both out there. But I think when it's more of like a band, it generally can be a little more organic, at least in the earlier days. They might get a point where their drummer leaves and then they might not have somebody right away that they know they want to go to, so they have auditions or whatever. But
do you think the Monkees are given too much shit for being a put together band, a slap together prefab?
Yeah, maybe, because I mean, you know, it was a show. It was really just for a show.
Yeah,
it's like it would be a little different if it wasn't a show and they were literally just this put together band.
Just a band, yeah.
But at the same time, as I said that, I'm like, would that bother me though? Like, what? Why? Why do I care?
Right. If music was what it was.
Yeah. It's like if it's played well and I like the songs, like that's all that really matters, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I have to assume as a kid you must have learned to play some Monkees early on.
Yeah. I don't know that I have specific memories of it, but I. My dad played drums too.
Okay. He
plays drums too. He's alive. and so I just sort of grew up around music, and he didn't necessarily teach me how to play drums, but I just sort of picked up on it from watching him and stuff like that.
Interesting.
And then, so, and I always had like a little drum set, like from before I can even remember.
Awesome.
So they were always around. And so I'd pick up things from watching him. And then a lot of it was then just like having a boombox next to my drums and like playing cassettes, and I would like play along with it. So, I am positive there were many days of me playing along to some of those Monkees cassettes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was, in that era would have been a lot of, Monkees and Huey Lewis going on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. That's so good. That does sound like a ton of fun. That is not something as a comedy writer or like sometimes performer that I can necessarily compare to, except for maybe like, well, like reading along with a movie you've seen a million times and like quoting it in front of your idiot friends or usually on your own. So I guess that's a similar thing.
I guess so. Yeah, I never really thought about that. Yeah, that is true. I guess that is like the, like, yeah, comedy or acting equivalent or something.
Because,
mm-hmm. I'm just trying to do what's on that tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you're just trying to do what's in that movie.
Right. I mean, I don't think in that moment you necessarily care about adding your own flavor to it. It's very much like, I want to mimic this because I want to be sort of in this.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. See, because this, it's weird because this is, I'm not trying to make it about me, but it's never occurred to me the musician thing could also link up to that weird nerdy thing I did as a kid.
Yeah. It does. And different people handle it different ways.
Sure.
Because I've definitely been in scenarios where, got to play whatever show where it's not necessarily a band that always plays together. You know, it's this guy got hired here, this guy.
Sure.
And there are definitely some people that do try to take that approach of making it more their own.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're playing, for me though, when you're playing like pre-existing songs, especially if it's like a recorded and well-known song, like I'm not going to try and make that my own.
Okay.
Like I want to play it like really as close to the real deal as possible.
Yeah.
Because like that's what, even though there's tons of things as a drummer I think I could do that 99% of the people wouldn't notice.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know. Like to me, it's just like, oh, we should recreate this as close as we can because people will react to that.
See, that's my thought too. I mean, there are two thoughts where it's like, I guess it's one thing, because I do this show every month where it's called a drinking game. And we drink, audience drinks, and we do a stage reading.
I was listening to the, it's an old one, but I was listening to the Wayne Fetterman episode.
Oh, okay. I probably don't stop talking about this show. So it's a thing I do, but my goal is to straight up mimic whoever I'm playing. And so I'm doing that exact same thing. It's like I get to live in Wayne's world for an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
And it was my favorite movie growing up as a little dipshit. And so getting to do that is very much the same. And that is 100% audience service. Whereas tomorrow, if somebody said, this is a script to the stage version of Wayne's World, I'd have to find my own thing, I feel like. But maybe not then. I don't know. Because that's one of those things. Why would you ever do that unless you were trying to serve the audience 100%?
Yeah.
It's not about you
at
that point. But then what are your feelings? I mean, I have to assume there are some like covers that you love that are just completely that band's version of
a
song.
Right. See, in that scenario, I think that's a little different because it's especially if they're recording it. Like, I totally get the, we're a band, we love this song, but we want to do our thing to it.
Sure.
Like, that's different to me than, hey, there's this variety show happening Largo, and we're going to do this song, this song, this song that everyone on Earth knows.
Makes sense, yeah.
So I think, like, putting your own stamp, if you're a band or even just, you know, a solo artist, like, doing your thing, like, I get that.
Okay.
'Cause there is that.
That makes sense.
There is that line. There are people that will even recording, like, do a cover just exactly like it is, and I think that has its place too.
Sure.
But you know, it depends on what you want out of it, I guess.
Yeah Okay, that makes sense. I like that we found a line. You know, it's not that we don't get to talk about music on here ever, mostly because I'm ignorant of like how it works. Okay, so let's see, do you have, out of all the well actually on this album, do you have a favorite track?
Well, I have two.
Okay.
And for different reasons.
That's fine, yeah.
You know, Last Train to Clarksville is great, yeah. But that's not my answer. My, like, actual, like, as a musician answer is what I already mentioned, Saturday's Child.
It's great.
I just think that's a really cool song. Just the, like, nostalgia and stupidity of it. Gonna Buy Me a Dog, the last song on the record, is just so wonderfully dumb.
Yes.
And it's just them goofing around. Like, there's... I've heard stories about that song that I don't buy.
Okay.
Like, they claim that it was supposed to almost be this kind of, like, sad song and being serious, but, like, they just, like, weren't having it. And so Davey and Mickey are in the booth recording the vocals and just were, like, goofing off the whole time and pissing off the engineers and stuff by not taking it seriously.
Sure.
And, I mean, that definitely comes across, but at the same time, I have a hard time believing that a song called Gonna Buy Me a Dog was serious.
Yeah.
Also... As funny and like loose as it seems at times, there are also like things that seem rehearsed.
Yeah.
When they're kind of doing like bits back, like they're definitely setting each other lines.
Yeah.
They're setting up lines. and I love it. Like it's one of those things I've listened, like it's sort of like the movie thing you're talking about, like knowing the exact light. Like I still to this day, like if I put that on right now, like I know exactly what they say when and when the laugh happens and how they laugh, like how many syllables are laughed at that point.
Oh my God. I love it. That's so funny. I mean, I wonder if that's, is that something you've always had, or does that come from being like a drummer or a musician in general? Because that kind of sense of, I mean, I've heard on your podcast where you seem to be the best at just doing a fucking song and just when you match it up, it's fucking great. It's but that's like there's a special kind of there's a part of your brain that not everybody else is functioning on.
Yeah, I think my brain works in a way that helps no one.
I get it. Completely understand that.
Like the things that I know are just like. I have a vast knowledge of useless shit, and it's helpful to no one.
I get it.
If I need to know something that would be helpful, I'm no help. It's just like that stuff goes right through me.
Yeah.
And you want me to name the band members of Extreme, a band that I, you know, in the early 90s had one CD that I listened to two songs on.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you every band member's name. Why? Why? And still to this day.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want me to get serious and really tell you some important stuff? Like I got nothing.
Nothing. Lost. Yeah. I completely understand. I mean, that's kind of what this show ends up being about, I think, a little bit. People with very specific knowledge might not help them in any capacity.
I like it. Like, yeah, I really, you know, admittedly haven't heard every episode, but when I've listened, I've enjoyed. And that's what I liked about it is that, like, while maybe I don't know the record that whoever was talking about, I love that they knew it as well as they did.
Right.
Well, again, like the Wayne Fetterman episode.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, I love Wayne, but I think he's hilarious. And but yeah, just hearing him talk about a Victor Borge record, which I had like a very, very slight knowledge of Victor Borge.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly from like I remember there being a commercial.
Yep, me too. That's all I knew before that.
And so that was, yeah. And just hearing him like, listening to the episode though made me be like, I kind of want to check more of this out now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why I've since bought a couple Victor Borge albums.
Nice.
Just because I'm going to give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have another or a favorite Monkees album of all the ones that you listened to growing up?
Nothing like specifically comes to mind because I just remember like, you know, more like certain songs off of different records. I feel like Headquarters comes to mind, which I think was the third record, and I think also that was the first record that they actually played on also.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if they played on all of it, but they were at least allowed to do a little more on that one.
Yeah.
And there's also some goofy stuff on there too that I loved as a kid, which I get, this speaks to my uncoolness, I think, of like knowing there's a song called Zilch on that record.
Okay.
Which is just this weird, I don't want to call it spoken word, but I don't want to call it a song either.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them saying dumb things like to a rhythm, and it starts with one, and then another one's added. And it's just, I don't know why it ever happened. Mm-hmm. Probably pot. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, and again, I'm sure somebody out there knows the answer to this, but there is a hip hop group, I think from the, maybe even the 80s, but, or my, I think it was the 90s, had a song that actually samples that. And I didn't know this until like 10 years ago.
Interesting.
Because the song starts with Peter Tork just going, Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina, Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. And that is used in, somebody please inform both of us, because I don't know who it is. But that's like a thing. And I remember, I think it was, I was in a car with a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he played whatever that hip hop song was. I was like, wait, what is this? And then I, so that blew my mind. And then I blew his mind by telling that's him that was from, right, a Monkees song.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I mean, that's rhythmically pretty perfect. That's pretty, yeah, that's so good. so sorry. I can't stop coughing today.
It's all right.
Well, what I want to do is make sure to recommend, well, why recommend this album? Because I don't know that there are going to be a whole lot of people of a certain generation. I don't know how many young listeners we have, but I always like to assume that there are a few.
Uh-huh.
And let's say they don't know the Monkees. And what's a good reason to listen to this album? Their first one, especially.
Yeah. Well, you know, from a comedy perspective, mm-hmm, there's not a lot, even, you know, as we said, it was a comedy show.
Yep.
This record doesn't necessarily reflect that.
Right.
With the exception of Gonna Buy Me a Dog.
Yep.
So I recommend it on that aspect, just for that last song. Mm-hmm. And it's just dumb, but it makes me happy. Like, yeah, if I hear it still, it always delights me when I hear it. And yeah, me and like my best friend, like, he has that same knowledge of the song, so we can pull out quotes from the song to each other and always have a good time with that. But you know, if you like, I don't know, I'm a sucker for just like a well-written pop song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are a good handful of those on this record. And there's also some clunkers, I'll admit. And there's I had forgotten about, there's a song on there that I don't know how the song wasn't a lawsuit. Maybe this came first, but I doubt it. There's a song called Let's Dance On, uh-huh, on this record that is like, do you know the old song Good Lovin'?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. I was noticing the same.
It's like the same song.
Mm-hmm.
Like the backing vocals do the, mm-hmm, same thing at the same time.
Yep.
The chords, are like the progressions of everything is the same. There's like one little difference. I'm like, how is this not? How is this okay?
Yeah.
So again, maybe that one was first. I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah, that was the thing I had forgotten about when I re-listened.
Yeah, I'd forgotten already. But yeah, that's really funny.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm not necessarily great at selling this, but there's some fun stuff on it. Mm-hmm. And I felt I wanted to do this when you asked me, but I felt a little panicked because again, I wanted to stay loyal to the name and mm-hmm. go things that I had on vinyl. Because there were plenty of comedy records that I listened to when I was younger and still listen to, mm-hmm. you know, even newer ones. And then of course there was like Weird Al, which plenty of options there. That was a huge thing in my childhood too. But yeah, I was like, I don't think I had any Weird Al in vinyl. I had some tapes, but,
well, I will say that if there's something that you like that was on vinyl, even if you didn't own it on vinyl, I don't give a fuck. Like,
right,
believe me, I've made some big, again, you're welcome to come back. You don't have to, but you're welcome to come back. No pressure, but pressure. I don't know when this is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say somewhere maybe in the June or July area
year.
So is there anything that you can promote for then? Or if there's something coming up, I can try and push that episode sooner.
Let's see. Well, you know, if we're talking July, I'm getting married in August.
Congratulations.
So look out
everybody
for that.
Everybody come to that. Yeah.
No, nothing too crazy. You know, I'll just say listen to Feliz Navipod.
Yes.
I'm at Tony Thaxton on Twitter. If you happen to be a nerd about Star Wars and music, on my Patreon page, I am literally writing a new song about a different Star Wars character every week.
Holy shit.
And,
oh my god.
So that's been fun. So patreon.com/TonyThaxton if you want to support me there and get any of those silly nonsense songs.
How deep are those cuts going? They have to go fairly deep, yes?
They're already getting there. I haven't been doing it that long. I'm about... Mm-hmm. I'm only like 6 weeks in right now.
Okay.
But I already went deep. Last week's song was about that one really tall Jawa that no one talks about.
That's
so you see all the Jawas in Star Wars, and then in the background there's this one that's like normal sized human.
That's right.
And no one talks about
that's
that.
That's really funny.
So I felt the need to write a song about that one.
Perfect. Well, I very much appreciate you doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome back, obviously.
I would be thrilled.
So throughout the year, again, depending on when this comes out, I'll still be doing it. I'm listening to a comedy album a day, so you guys can go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl to watch my reviews. At this point, I'm still playing catch-up. Hopefully by July, I've caught up. I'm doing that, listening to a lot of garbage, but also some pretty good stuff, too. That's about it. Go to stolendress.com for everything else. And that's about it. Thank you guys for listening. And as always... Have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.